All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue. I remind you guys, the Right Side Way, brought to you every single day by attorney Stan McDonald. Yeah, Stan McDonald, he's a law partner at Wilmer and Lee up in Huntsville. Been practicing for 30 years, and he is the daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. I'll tell you more about Stan here in just a few minutes. So yesterday we spent some time talking through Trump's first 100 days, right? We asked all of you to give your favorite and least favorite things about the first 100 days of Trump 2.0, and the feedback came flooding in. Lots of high points, and I'd say the border being controlled was, generally speaking, the number one favorite of the Right Side audience. The least favorite thing kind of ran the gamut, but one thing I did not expect, though, was the number of people who expressed that their least favorite thing about Trump's first 3 months is that no one's gone to jail yet. There's apparently a desire out there to see a bunch of perp walks, like that will somehow put salve on the wounds that we need to see. For some, it was the Epstein perpetrators, I get that. For others, it's FBI or somebody in Jan 6 commission or the Biden administration members themselves. I get it, though, I do. And I will agree on the one hand that if somebody committed an actual crime, that I want to see them behind bars myself. I'm an attorney. I love the rule of law. I love the fact that we are a nation of laws, and I despise those who would flaunt the laws for their own gain. But there's a process, a real process, a process that we should all want for ourselves if we ever found ourselves in trouble with the law. There's also, by the way, an image. I mean, I don't want all things they said about Trump being vengeful or roguish or a disrespecter of the law or a tyrant. I don't want to give the left any fuel to burn. I believe that sooner or later, someone's going to walk that walk of shame on any number of issues. And it'll take finding the actual evidence, though, not just finding ourselves with a good mad, because a good mad doesn't stand up in court. See, the left is determined to make us out to be the cult followers of a grand dictator. They call us Nazis, they call us sycophants, and we're not. We have to sometimes take the time and put in the effort to flip that script, to actually confront the lies, though, and lay out the truth, to get the evidence first, to get the indictments, to get all the legal ducks in a row, to make our ironclad case, which they never do, but we will. Because if we don't, then we're no better than Adam Schiff, who swore he saw the Russia collusion evidence that never existed, or Adam Kinzinger, who swore that January 6th was an actual insurrection and then worked thereafter to ruin people's lives, or Merrick Garland, who arrested grandmothers for praying in front of abortion clinics. So as I was thinking all this through, I was reminded of something that happened many moons ago in college. It was University of South Alabama in the mid-80s, spring of 1986, if I recall. I was very involved in campus activities, and I was also serving at the time as the vice president for student government. I've told this story before, but it's been quite a while, but let me just back up and tell you again. There came a day on the campus when this guy showed up, going by the name of Brother Jim. Brother Jim, like I said, I've told you about him before, and he was one weird dude. He was an odd bird, professed to be an evangelist of some type. What he really amounted to, though, was a rabble-rouser. He had a Bible in his hand. Don't get me wrong, there's a time and a place for laying it out strong like John the Baptist, but this guy was not that guy. He was just weird. As he stood there in the student commons for days, yelling at students, calling them names, waving his Bible in the air, even hissing at them, all the while claiming that God did not love them until they repented of their evil ways. Meanwhile, his chosen means of spreading the good news about God's love for the world was to demean and belittle and criticize and just generally act the fool. Not only that, but he just looked like somebody who was not right in the head. You know what I'm saying? He looked like Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation showed up with a mean streak and a Bible. And to say, though, that he drew a crowd was an understatement. For some of the hundreds who came daily to hear his diatribes, it was like comedy. They laughed and mocked him. To others, it was disturbing. To me, it just made me mad. I felt like he was making a mockery of my God. Well, I wanted him gone. I was the vice president of student government, and I was ready to call for his head. I wanted campus security to haul him away while everybody watched. In my opinion, he was making God look like a goober, and I was having none of it. He was absolutely creating the wrong image and portraying nothing of the God who so loved the world that he gave his only son. So I talked with campus authorities. And the deal came down to the fact that the Student Government Association had the authority to request his removal. But he was otherwise not breaking any laws, they said. Okay. Well, like I said, I was the vice president of the student government. And then it ramped up, though. It ramped up when my sweet fiancée at the time, Charlene, who I've now been married to for over 38 years, was walking past the commons where Brother Jim was preaching one day, spotted her wearing something he did not approve of, and yelled out, "You hussy!" Called on her to repent, never knowing for a minute that she had already loved the Lord and was already serving as a volunteer leader with Young Life Ministries and changing kids' lives. Well, that did it for me. I got my friend Mike on the phone, and Mike was the president of SGA, and I was the vice president. I said, "Mike, we got to do something. He needs to go." But to my surprise, Mike refused. He said, "Phil, I can't stand him either, but he's got a constitutional right to say those things. There's no law being broken here. If we kick him off the campus, who's next?" It didn't matter how many ill-advised "yeah, buts" I had in the conversation. Mike held firm and he would not agree. And then he said something, though, that really struck a chord with me, one that I've never forgotten. He said, "Phil, if you believe he's wrong, then go out there tomorrow and counter his message. People will listen to you. You got as much right to speak as he does." Well, I didn't want to, though. I just wanted him canceled. But I couldn't argue anymore, because it hit me that Mike was right. In a way, I was right, but what hit me right then was it's possible to be right and still be wrong. So I geared up, I prayed up, and I studied up. I literally tabbed my own Bible, made notes, and studied, and asked some other people to be giving me advice and to pray at a certain time. And the next day, I was about as nervous as a pig in a bacon factory. But I went down to the Commons, and sure enough, there was old Brother Jim. And as he yelled and accused and threatened people in the name of God, I walked out in front of all those students, several hundred at the time, although it felt like thousands, and I walked up to Brother Jim, and he literally, y'all, I kid you not, he hissed at me. Like, he crouched down a little bit, and he pointed his finger, and he hissed like a cat. It was weird, man. And I asked the crowd if they wanted to hear what the Bible really had to say about how God feels about us. Well, the crowd went nuts, and so I read a few verses, and then Brother Jim screamed at me. And then I read some more. And this went on for like 10 or 15 minutes until finally him screaming and yelling and then me reading scripture, Brother Jim threw his hands up in the air and literally walked away. And if I recall, he left the campus that day and we never saw him again. Some say he was a guy just pulling a stunt, like that his whole shtick was designed to somehow get people to speak up. I don't think so. I think he had a message that was wrong and it took a message that was right to counter it. Well, here's why I say all of that. Because what I learned that day is that as badly as I wanted the ranks of conservatism to grow or Christianity to grow, that it won't ever grow by virtue of cancel culture. I wanted Brother Jim gone. I wanted him canceled. I wanted him kaput. But my friend Mike, who was a former Ranger bat guy, my friend Mike reminded me that what was really needed, though, was just a healthy dose of truth. That truth is always the greatest defense to the lie, but that a truth left untold has no value. And the truth must make it into the public sphere, into the hearing of others, for it to take root and do any good at all. Now, to be sure, how you present it also matters, right? Even the Apostle Paul said that he came to the point that he knew he had to relate to his audience in order to win them over all the more. Not that his message ever changed, just that he made sure he presented in a way that his audience could receive it. But oh, by the way, it doesn't mean that you'll also persuade everyone. You can get over that idea. There are those who are so entrenched in their lies and their misdeeds that it doesn't matter what you say or do, but nonetheless, you still need to say or do. I believe, though, there are those who are still in the majority right now, the more of us than there are of them, that simply want to know the truth, and it might take you or I speaking it. It might take us patiently working through the process to get a true and enforceable indictment for the crimes that we know were perpetrated during the Biden administration. Yes, I believe there were some that were definitely committed. But we got to do it right. We got to lock it in. We got to make it bulletproof so that when the news becomes public and the perp takes their walk, we don't wind up with egg on our faces or give the left just a stronger message to attack us with. And by the way, folks, that cannot happen in 90 days' time. All I know is this. The freedom to be wrong is just as strong in this great nation as the freedom to be right. But in the end, the truth is the right side still to be on. If we don't like a message, if we don't like a cultural shift, if we don't like the mantra of the left, if we believe that someone has committed a crime but we haven't seen the proof yet, then we can't just sit back and wait. We may have to speak up. Speak the truth, see what happens. But here's the bottom line. You still got to do it the right way. Because even when you're right, you can still be wrong. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.